Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
All right, we're here for a special late night edition of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. We are live following AEW Dynamite, and I'm Wade Keller, host of the program. We're going to have two co-hosts today because we weren't quite sure with the late time slot if we'd have a lot of callers. So let's break from our format and do introductions now so everyone knows who's who. And we'll begin with Eric Kroll, former Pro Wrestling Torch columnist. Welcome to one of the co-host chairs, Eric.
Hello, hello. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. And we also have Joshua Chambers from PWTorch.com. He handles the AEW Dynamite primers for our website. Joshua, welcome to the other co-host chair.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited about this.
Great to have you. So we do have phone lines open. I know it's later than usual. Well, later for all of you, not just some of you. But it also gives people on the West Coast who maybe don't have a chance to call into the show for various reasons to give us a call. So give the phone numbers up front. We only have one person on hold, so the wait shouldn't be long. So that should be encouraging. And the number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And push 1 on your keypad to indicate that you want to join the conversation. We'd love to hear from some first-time callers. And, of course, if our regulars are listening, this is also a call to action to join the conversation. As expected, Eric and Joshua, not a blockbuster newsworthy show, but a decent number of things to talk about. I'll go with recency bias and begin with the main event match, arguably the biggest segment on the show, a tag team title match, the fast-rising acclaimed Anthony Bowens and Matt Caster coming up short against the Young Bucks, but a competitive match. Joshua, we'll start with you. What have you thought of the Acclaim so far, and what did you think of their performance tonight? Did they seem in over their head, or did it seem like they belonged in the ring with the Bucks?
Yeah, I'll start in ring. I'll say I really enjoyed them. I think they're going to be great. I do have some concerns about the sustainability of rap gimmicks. I think the Bucks tweeting that they were wrestling the John Cena guys summed up, I think, my feeling on that. We'll see how that goes. But I mean, I think AEW's shown that they can turn a sort of a weird gimmick into something good with Orange Cassidy, or are showing that. So maybe they'll turn that around. And then I do last week I thought that the Acclaim's rap verse was terrible and exactly the sort of humor that I don't want on my AEW wrestling. And so I was glad we didn't get more of that. But in ring, I thought they were great. I thought their music video was fun. And I think overall they're going to be very good.
Eric, over to you. Same question.
I mean, there was this movie released in 2004 called Mean Girls. And the head mean girl has a famous line, "Stop trying to make Fetch happen. Stop trying to make the Acclaimed happen," at least with this rap gimmick. God, it's just not well done. If it were well done, it would be fine. The match was great. My notes say pretty much Nick Jackson is so great.
Yeah.
And just they are the Ric Flair of tag teams, like 80s, 90s Ric Flair of tag teams. They can have a good match with anybody. I mean, they're just they make it look effortless. It's really kind of great. The cheating at the end with the ref bump and the low blow and the boombox shot and the second ref running in. I mean, it was great. It was exciting. It was the best thing in a very plotting, mostly missed second hour. And you know, the only quibble I had is the guy who got put through the table. I think it was Bowens. He was sort of very gingerly put through the table, and it broke anyway. I don't know if that's just because the Jackson is so little, and the Matt Jackson, I think, is so little, and Bowens is so big, or the table was just gimmicked. But it looked kind of funny. But that's a small quibble to have. They kind of saved a lackluster second hour.
I you say second hour. I'm kind of curious what was so good about the first hour, too. Didn't hate it, but I didn't think the second hour was particularly paced all that different than the first hour. You know, a little more star power with Jericho, MJF, and Sting. Eric, what in the first hour keeps you from designating that plotting also?
I mean, the first hour was solid. You had a decent, if not great, opening tag match with some star power in Jericho. You had a Sting interview, which is star power-y. You had, you know, Taz coming in. And you had an average six-man that had some funny Tully Dinosaur jokes. I guess it was competent, and so maybe it looks better by comparison to a second hour that just, oof. We can talk about that now if you want.
Let's not hit too many topics. I'll throw to them specifically as we go, but I don't want to get ahead of our callers too much. So we'll talk in broad generalizations and then get into specifics as we go through calls. But yeah, I was kind of wondering, because to me, I'm agreeing with you that the second hour was plotting. In fact, I agree with your praise of the Young Bucks. The Acclaimed have been good in every match they've had. This was not a one team match. The Acclaimed have a lot of experience and they've been smooth. Bowens is like a perfectionist, a excellence of execution type guy in the ring. Just everything he does looks so sharp, and Caster is really good too. I just think they're going to be a big thing. I think your angst, both of your angst at the rap gimmick is intentional. I think it's self-aware. The question is, you know, how does it get received in a way that, in a meta level, that says, I don't want to dislike heels who are doing a retro gimmick that's easy to make fun of, or does it work in a non-meta way, which is, when they get live crowds back, are they going to get booed out of the building in a way that heels are supposed to? And that's the battle for a gimmick like the Acclaimed, but AEW is not running from having baby faces make fun of them for being like John Cena. So the question is, can we get past the meta aspect of this is awful and I want to boo them and embrace the idea this is awful and we want to boo them? And that's going to be the challenge, or I don't know if it's a challenge, but that's going to be what's going to play out. I think when some fans are like, I don't like these guys, it's like, well, that's the point. Eric, what do you think to that? Push back a little bit on kind of groaning at the gimmick when I think that is the self-aware point.
I don't know how self-aware it is. I mean, if he were a good rapper, I guess it would work a little better. Too many dick jokes. I mean, I think they did something last week that kind of almost was like a gay homophobic type joke about the Young Bucks when they attacked them. I'm a little uncomfortable with that in the year 2020. I don't think you really need to do it. And that sort of, when you're rapping, that sort of comes with the territory.
Right.
So,
yeah.
But to your point, I think your point is the correct one. Is it go away heat or is it actual heel heat? And we won't know until the crowds come back at some point in 2021.
Yeah. And fortunately, if they decide they want to move on from the rap gimmick, I think they've developed some good chemistry and there's a good dynamic there. We could go on, Josh. We'll talk more about this as the show progresses, but because it's late, I want to get to our callers sooner than later and not do too much of a discussion here, at least in the onset. We are up to three people on hold, so we'll start marching through calls. You can be the fourth, 347-215-8558, and push 1 on your keypad. You can also email us, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. If you want to contribute to the show that way, that applies also Friday during or shortly after SmackDown on Christmas night, a pretty loaded episode of SmackDown. WWE not waving the white flag for viewership on Fox on Friday. I'll be by with a Christmas night episode live afterwards. So when you're done with all your Christmas festivities, whatever they happen to be, scaled back very likely, hopefully, join us after SmackDown for the show. And you can email us or call. All right, so we'll begin with area code 705 and then on deck 541. 705, go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, guys, this is Hinton calling from London, Ontario, Canada. How you doing?
Doing good, Hinton. Good to hear from you. Yeah, so what stood out tonight on the show?
Hi. I thought it was a mostly boring show. I don't think having two decently long Dark Order TV matches were a good choice to retain viewers on this night. I want to start with Sting, and I understand I'm probably going to get a reputation of being the resident Sting basher here on PW Torch, but I'll dive in anyway. So
you're not resting
Sting,
that crown for me.
So Sting basically goes from serious to smiley to serious to smiley in four appearances. Last time I called, I was pretty critical of Sting's interview with Tony Schiavone, and I was told that, hey, since he can't wrestle, it makes sense that he can be the smiley veteran who was only serious during his debut for that, you know, for that pop, but then otherwise he just kind of settles into the smiley role. But now it seems like he's just kind of going back and forth between character presentation each week, and it's just making me roll my eyes. And this week in particular, what irked me was him reciting a Dusty Rhodes story that is, it's much better reserved for a podcast. Like, I mean, with all due respect to Dusty Rhodes, why must Sting talk about how Dusty told him, we're going to put face paint on you? Like, shouldn't we as fans believe that that was his idea and his persona and not just something that like a promoter told him to put on or, you know, I told him that he's going to wrestle Ric Flair. And secondly, just related to that to that promo when Team Taz came out, I think Team Taz is just really pathetic, to be honest. Like, there's supposedly four tough guys plus Taz himself who can still lock on a Taz mission. However, last week they all cower from one guy, baseball bat notwithstanding, and two guys this week, they have the man advantage. It's not like their characters are cowardly heels like MJF. No, they're monster heels. One's an athletic badass and one manager that put on a submission on in its prime wrestler. I mean, I think Brian Cage has no chance of beating Darby Allin next week. And I'm not compelled by the Sting character at all. So yeah, what do you, over to you guys.
No, good. Okay, great. So a couple topics there. I do want to note, and Eric, help me out on this one. I can verify Sting wore makeup before he got to WCW. So I don't know if any of that story is real. Or how much of it is real, or if Dusty just didn't know Sting wore makeup and Sting didn't happen to be wearing it when he was backstage. I mean, I thought Sting was wearing makeup from the second he showed up. So what did I miss something in his retelling of the story, or is it suspicious?
Well, I think in the 80s, back when Sting was tag teaming with the future Ultimate Warrior, they were the Blade Runners. They had makeup on then.
And Rock and Flash. They for sure had makeup.
And Sting, then when he was with Eddie Gilbert, I believe, had makeup on. I mean, I think he had like the makeup and the buzz cut for most of the 80s and most of the 90s until he became Crow Sting. You know, I hear your point, but we got a Dusty impression out of it. That was enough for me.
Well,
clearly,
the question isn't was it an endearing Dusty impression? I agree with that, but was he embellishing or
yeah, probably.
You know,
But his point was, he was trying to answer the question, and he took the long road to answer it. The question that Tony Schiavone finally, his second question, was the question we've been wanting to know for 4 weeks now. Why are you here? And he used this Dusty impression to segue into the why he's here. He saw Cody on TV and wanted to be a part of it. So I guess that's better than saying Tony Khan waved a whole stack of cash at me, and I could still get this money, so why not? I'm trying to retire.
Or I found a money mark, another money mark. I thought that was beyond, that was in my past. And that's not how I feel about Tony or how Sting feels about him, but that would have been like the ultimate, you know, the ultimate meta shoot. Oh my God, did he just say that type of thing that other people have in a roundabout way said or certainly thought. Yes, I thought I'm with hitting on Sting in a more general, in a broad sense. I think that Sting's kind of Southern California inflection does not match the character, the dark snowfall, and the, you know, like his charisma and his presence has not matched his voice and his speaking. He's never worked on it. I think it absolutely is something that he could have augmented and adjusted where it would sound a little less like, yes, I'm dressed up as Sting, but no, I'm talking to Steve Borden like I do when I'm just hanging out with my friends. And he's just never quite matched those two up well. And that was, again, the case tonight. I still give a thumbs up to the promo because I thought the Dusty story, the fact that it was embellished actually made it feel more storyline than behind-the-scenes stuff. And I think the AEW audience, while they shouldn't push it too much, I think they appreciate a little bit of not pulling the curtain back and breaking character, but people know Sting wasn't born wearing makeup. He didn't wear makeup to fourth grade. Like, at some point, he decided that would be a good marketable look. And the idea that he's crediting Dusty with it as part of a story that Cody drew me back into wrestling works for me. That's fine. I thought this was on the better end of Sting's long promos, because from the late 80s, when he first started getting a push, he'd lose his train of thought in mid-sentence. And that's where his ow came from, because he would do that when he got nervous and lost train of thought. He'd just yell, and then he'd walk away, like, without even finishing his thought. This was the most – this, and this sounds like a backhanded compliment, because it is. This was the longest stretch of sentences I've heard Sting give where it didn't seem like he lost his train of thought when there was a camera on him talking. Who knows? Maybe there was post-editing or something. But I thought it was nice because the message – it worked because I thought the message was sincere. And I think that's why it was easier for him to give the promo he gave, because he is glad to have another chance. It is full circle. He's back on TNT. He's in the ring with Shivani. It feels like home, not this foreign land where he was looked down upon. So ultimately, I gave a thumbs up to the interview, but in the end, I think it's a net positive, but the negative that comes along with it is so much of the mystique just goes poof whenever Sting opens his mouth and talks at any length. And I thought some of the mystique went away because he just sounds like such a regular guy despite the great ring entrance AEW's created for him and the get-up and the reputation. Joshua, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I'm with Hinton on a couple. The first one, I want to say the Dusty impression story I thought was an interesting inclusion because Cody Rhodes famously detests Dusty Road impressions. So I think that using it in a storyline where he's like, oh, Cody brought me back, I hope that comes up because Cody talks about how much he hates it all the time. But I'm with Hinton on Team Taz. I know it's Sting and I know it's a television program, but you have five men terrified of this senior citizen in face paint. Like, it just the one guy, I get it, but like it does make them look awful. And like you're saying, they're not cowardly heels like MJF. They're supposed to be these badasses. And I don't get it. I think my positive takeaway was, I think Ricky Starks is great. And at the risk of sounding like Vince McMahon, I think if he bulks up a bit, he's going to be a real star. And then also, I don't want us to lose the point that Darby Allin in kayfabe now does have the ability to teleport.
Yes.
So I think that's an important thing to note.
Now, I will say in the realm of plausibility, I don't know how much time went by between showing – I'd have to rewatch. But I don't think the camera was on him right before the lights went dark. So unless I'm remembering wrong, there's a possibility he started making his way down to the ring before the lights went out. And I'm going to tell myself that, because it's Christmas time.
They for sure showed it. Darby was in the frame, and then he left when he saw what was going on, and then the lights went out.
You're saying, Eric, it was plausible that there was no jump cut there.
Darby exited stage right or stage left, whatever the stage direction is. You saw it. Then eventually the lights went out and he was in the ring. I mean, yeah, he still got there quickly, but they did foreshadow it with him leaving the screen when he was up in the rafters or up in the stands.
In that case, I hit my hat to his cardio. That is,
it wasn't Jake Roberts who made it that far that quickly. I bet Darby, could get on the skateboard and parkour his way to the ring. Do you parkour on a skateboard? I don't know. Probably not. Maybe. We'll ask John Morrison. Or Darby. All right. Hinton, back to you for any follow-up on anything we've had to say.
Yeah. Those are valid points. I want to move on to the Omega promo. I thought it was a fantastic promo. This is really good. I particularly liked Omega's line of, how are you going to fare when you're in the ring with someone who actually despises you, which is a really logical way to build to that match, because the most brutal match we saw Phoenix in was against his brother who supposedly loves him, right? But while I thought that was great, there was absolutely zero effort made in terms of building up Phoenix and Phoenix's character for the match. Do you think they could have done something, maybe instead of Pac having Phoenix in a match tonight, just something to give a little shine to Phoenix going into next week?
Well, he was too busy training, apparently. Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. AEW doesn't always do a great job in terms of giving each wrestler in a match that they're advertising ahead of time a chance to speak or a video package. Like, they had the Acclaimed had that video package that they put together earlier in the show, and it made the match feel a little more important. I'd have liked to have heard from the Bucks, you know, and get a few words from them about facing this hot, fast-rising team. And so, yeah, you know, when you have your main event next week, it's a world title match. I think they could have framed it as a bigger deal and not had Phoenix just being someone who was talked about, but actually do something to build him up more than Kenny Promo. I do agree Kenny Omega and Don Callis are great together. They have a chemistry that only is forged through time and genuine personal personal affection for each other. And they seem like they enjoy hanging out with each other. They seem like they'd be completely obnoxious to be around, but they finish each other's sentences. They play off each other. There's no sense that one's talking over the other in a way that annoys the other. It's just that and Kenny's jacket, Don Callis' demeanor, I just think it's a great act. It's on the higher end of what I was hoping for with Kenny, period. And even once Don Callis showed up, this is on the high end of what I imagine they could be. And they're stopping short of being overbearing, especially Callis, I feared, might be a little overbearing and kind of suck the oxygen out of the room for Kenny. But I think there's a real good dynamic between them. So that said, yeah, I think a little bit more to build up Phoenix would have been good. Joshua, you first on this one.
I completely agree about their chemistry. I think it's really compelling. I think it's very good and fun. And, I mean, it got me to watch an episode of Impact for the first time in a very long time. So it's very, very good. I do want to touch real quick on the fact that Kenny Omega looked awesome. I took a picture of his heel outfit, and I sent it to my friend. I was like, "This is what I want to look like." So I think he's doing great. I love Kenny Omega. I love heel Kenny Omega, and I think anything he wants to do with the Lucha Brothers is going to be absolute money.
Eric, over to you.
Well, I have liked and even loved everything Kenny and Don Callis have done. I did not think this was an effective promo at building up the Phoenix title match. Kenny just pointed out all of Phoenix's losses and called him a choker. You know, he was healing, and he wasn't putting over his opponent as someone who has any chance of beating him for the world title next week. And Phoenix needed a little bit of that. In fact, it was so noticeable that when they came back out of the interview, Tony Schiavone, it almost sounded like a voiceover that was recorded later. It might have been live to tape, I don't know. But just to kind of cover up for that fact and mention that and try to put Phoenix over a little bit more. Mostly, though, I couldn't hear Kenny in the promo because his jacket was so loud. He just drowned him out.
Nicely played.
But at the bottom line, it should have been more effective. They should have been more effective at trying to build up Phoenix, as you both mentioned. But that's a thing I've noticed with the Lucha Brothers their entire time at the promotion. They're underused, get the language thing. They don't trust them to do promos. But it seemed like they had their peak back at All Out, the second one in September of 2019, right before the promotion started, when they had their ladder match with the Bucks, and then they've just sort of been treading water since. You're gonna love that match next week, though. Really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's a good point. For a heel to run down a babyface challenger who fans already believe in is one thing, especially if the heel is going to win ultimately, which, you know, I expect to be the case here. Yes, Kenny's so arrogant that you do want to see Phoenix get in some shots at him, and you know, if there's a live crowd or, you know, people sitting at home watching, they're going to cheer the Near Falls more because Kenny's so arrogant and Callis is so obnoxious, and he set the bar so high that anything Phoenix does will seem like an affront to Kenny's self-image of how dominant he's going to be. That said, yeah, give us a music, like, not, you know, give us a video package that shows Phoenix highlights. And yes, show us him beating people and talk up why he's getting this title shot again. You know, remind people of what his credentials are, because it is a good point. You know, when Kenny's just there going, yeah, he chokes. And yeah, you know, imagine if you get beat up by your brother that bad, how it's going to be when someone who isn't family beats you up. You need something to balance that out, and that wasn't in the mix here. So as good as Kenny and Callis were, not having the ability to fire back other than Schiavone trying to clean it up a little bit, it is under – it's you're coming up short on what this match could mean had they done more to build up the babyface challenger. And I don't think they did anything. And I think they could have put in some effort. And they didn't do anything to make any viewer at home think there's a chance in hell Phoenix is going to be crowned champion next week. And you don't want to lose credibility selling people on something that no matter how hard you sell it, you know it's not going to happen. But this was almost like, you know, we're not even going to try. It's just going to be a good match. Tune in. And I don't like that. I think you ought, if you're going to have a world title match, the challenger should have enough credibility that you believe they could win. And that wasn't done here. You know, even, I mean, the Acclaimed, oh, they're 8-1. They're on a hot streak. They, you know, they beat SCU. It's like they talked them up in Phoenix. They just didn't have enough of that.
And something real quick.
Go ahead, Joshua.
Sorry, yeah, I just wanted to say something about something Eric said. Let these guys cut Spanish promos. I don't see, just throw some subtitles on there, throw a translator. I don't see the problem with cutting a fiery promo in another language, you know? And I think that it'll help the characters get over. And I don't really see what the hesitation is on the part of these wrestling promotions.
Good point. Hidden, back to you for any closing words.
Yeah, those are great points. I wanted to touch, I guess, lastly on the Kip Sabian wedding announcement segment. I have mixed feelings about it, leaning towards bad. I like the moderate level of seriousness that involving best friends, one of them being hospitalized, but wasn't really a fan of Miro making all those cheesy facial expressions. And this is, again, inconsistent character presentation I was talking about from Sting earlier, that Miro's serious one moment, unserious another. He's just kind of playing this, being very whimsical. And I'm feeling just general apathy when I see him on my television. And same thing for, like that's a wedding angle that's supposed to boost ratings. There is no heat for me, like on Kip Sabian and Penelope. I don't know them enough to care one way or another about their wedding in February. I don't know if you guys feel the same way.
Eric, talk about Miro. Talk about the wedding.
Miro's jacket, again, I couldn't hear over it. It was very, very loud in a Eurotrash sort of way. My notes on this segment say, God, who cares? I popped when the best friends music hit, because I'm like, maybe they can do something to save this. But it was a swerve. For some reason, they were loading Trent into an ambulance. It struck me as very Raw-like. I didn't understand what was going on there. They didn't do a good job of explaining it. Have they had a tag team match yet between best friends and Miro and Kip Sabian? And so by the time they do, it's going to be like 4 to 5 months until this TV feud that is kind of there some weeks and not there other weeks is going to happen. All for, you know, the good thing to come out of this was we found out that the Beach Break show will be Wednesday, February 3rd. I'm not sure why they named the special show with the special marketing after, I think Beach Break is a move that Orange Cassidy does. So I don't know. It was the segment was just kind of there. Kip Sabian is lame. What are you going to do? They can't all be winners. But the problem was it came in the middle of this sort of murderer's row of second hour snooze fest, that stuff that fell flat. I didn't like Pac Butcher, Jade Cargill, Miro's fancy jacket, the Cody Uno match, and then the Sheeta angle. It was. And Sean Spears. God, it was just like a murder, like six in a row, flat segment. Oof.
Yeah. It wasn't just segments. The matches were sloppy. I mean, it was amateur hour. The timing during the matches on so many of the moves were off. The timing on the finishes were clunky. Butcher who moved into position on a springboard. And he literally looked up. He's like, oh, I have to move three steps to the right in order to take this move. And it was just one thing after another like that. Pac and Butcher had some clunky moments, too, at the end. Just this kind of laborious beatdown by Butcher on Pac, and then Pac makes a comeback. And it just – it was so – you know, Kingston's like, I'm going to get up from the announce booth. And then Lance Archer just happens to be standing stage right, and he's like, I'm going to come out and stop you from – walking to the ring to yell at your wrestler, who apparently is very hard of hearing. But it was, yeah, it's just one thing after another. In the women's match, it's one of the worst matches I've seen Dustin in a while. It wasn't like awful, but usually he's smoother than that. So it just felt like everybody was a little off which is kind of what made the main event really welcome. Even Jericho was just off in his match and seemed winded and sluggish and kind of walking through quicksand a little bit. So, it's, yeah, just a rough night in terms of in-ring action. It wasn't, like, awful, but it was just there were things because I think there was an honest effort, but a clunkiness and bad timing. And sometimes it just was the guys in the ring, like QT Marshall, was just terrible. Like, everything just felt like it was – you know, your third week at training camp or something with what they were doing. So all that was rough. All right, I've gone off and ranted. I don't even know what the original point was. Hinton, thanks for the call. Always good to hear from you.
Thanks. See you, everyone. Go VIP.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Yeah, the Miro stuff. I will round back to that for a second. The way to enjoy Miro is to resign yourself to the idea that he's not going to be a main eventer and that the reason that Vince McMahon gave up on him in part is because he can't have a moment of taking himself serious, and it's just not who he is, and he just wants to have fun, and he's going to be a mid-carder who's really good in the ring, who wants to talk about video games and photobomb people, and if you resign yourself to that and don't think about what could have been and accept the fact that that's not who he ever was, and it would be totally inauthentic for him to try, and I've resigned myself to that, where now I'm just sort of, I wouldn't say embracing, but not lamenting the fact that AEW didn't do more with him. Like, I'm past blaming AEW, and I just sort of see him as sort of a goof who's going to be a goof on the mid-card and be smiling and happy doing it and have some good mid-card matches. I mean, hopefully that matches his pay, Eric.
Well, I would feel bad about Tony Khan signing the guy. But he was had his paid promo on Impact this week where he mentioned that I think his family's worth $7 billion. So $250 grand or whatever he's paying Miro at this point.
I do think, Wade, that I don't buy that narrative about Miro. I think this is a tremendous waste of legitimate star power. It could be.
I finally come to terms with it, Joshua. Now you're going to make me resent it. Go ahead.
You're a fool, Wade. No, I think he's set up to fail no matter how he went about it. Because I think being paired with Kip and Penelope, two people I don't care about, and I don't think anyone cares about. I mean, they've been doing this wedding angle for 3 months, and I keep forgetting about it. And then it comes up on the show. I'm like, oh right, that's stupid. Like, I mean, and is it just to do the best man name? Is that what they were going? It's just, it's dumb, and I hate it, and I don't care about it. I did enjoy the build-up to Kids TV Online about it being the first ever wrestling wedding on TNT. So they know it's dumb, but they keep doing it to us, and I don't know why.
All right, fair enough. All right, let's move on to our next call. You can still call us if you're streaming live, 347-215-8558. Merry Christmas, everyone, by the way. I haven't said so. We're now officially in Christmas Eve territory on the East Coast as we're streaming this, and hope you all have a good holiday weekend here. All right, so up next is 541 and then on deck 305. 541, go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey guys, it's Mark from Eschen, Oregon VIP, and happy holidays, happy Christmas for sure, but more importantly, happy Festivus. Get your polls out.
Excellent. Here in Minnesota, it was grass on the ground everywhere until mid-afternoon today, and now we've got like a half a foot of snow. It was a blizzard. Went out, took my dog on a walk with my son. We bundled up, and it was like Christmas arrived just, you know, a true Minnesota Christmas atmosphere arrived just in time. So it's definitely, the Christmas spirit is here, even though a couple days ago it felt like it, since I didn't plan to leave the house and I'm not seeing anybody, it just felt like a weird that it was even later this week, but now it feels official. And it helped that there were Christmas lights around the entrance and on Dynamite. That really drove it home.
So, first of all, Wade, that was a reference to Seinfeld, Festivus. It's George Costanza's dad.
Oh,
I don't know if you got that.
Oh, no,
I listened to...
We smiled. We didn't laugh, but we smiled.
Wade was no self.
Yeah, very few people laugh at my really bad jokes. I listened to the flagship with Greg Parks, and you were talking about the weather. And you had a different conversation in the flagship with Greg that I wanted to actually touch upon at the as my question, but I wanted to hit what you were talking about with Rey Fénix first. First of all, let me just specify. I actually joined the show towards the top, or at what I thought was the end of the show. So that actually created a unique perspective. But Rey Fénix, when Omega cut the promo on Rey, I totally agree that he didn't put Rey over in any way, shape, or form. And it's really difficult to look forward to their match next week other than the fact that it's probably going to be amazing. You know, so for me as a wrestling fan, I'm going to absolutely watch it. They'll probably deliver. But it kind of felt like, you know, entry-level Bobby the Brain Heaton family type stuff, you know, battling the Barbarian or Haku, you know, before you work your way up to Mr. Perfect or, you know, whatever.
Sure.
So, it just felt like they telegraphed that. But I definitely wanted to...
Mark, I'd say this to that. I agree with you. I don't want to hear about how good a match is going to be on TV. That's self-evident. People who care about that are going to know it's good. They're already going to know it's good, and let it just be good. The goal of wrestlers isn't to have good matches. It's to win matches. And the goal of announcers is to call the sport as if the outcomes matter way more than how exciting or how many stars it is. And so the idea that you would rest on kind of lean on the idea that, well, no matter what we do, people are going to tune in because Kenny Omega is going to have a great match against Rey Fénix. It's like, yeah, we know that, but like, sell us on the drama, the storyline, what's at stake, the sports aspect of what happens to the winner and loser, and why there's a chance the challenger beats the champion, and focus on that. I don't like at all when the quality of the match is used as the primary selling point. Sometimes at the expense, and in this case, at the expense of kind of setting up more of a clear feud. I want big time matches to be promoted as if they won't be good, and you really have to work hard to get people to care about the personalities involved and let the quality be the bonus that should come along with hopefully most of your top level matches. Joshua, what do you think of that?
No, I completely agree. I think anyone that knows anything about the product knows that those two are really gonna put on a show, and just like revamping that doesn't do good for anyone. Doesn't convince anyone new to tune in, right? Which is the point of a promo, is to hype it up and make sure people come back to watch. And I completely agree with you and with what you said before.
And Eric, I would think that if it seems like AEW thinks, well, everyone's going to tune in because this match is so good, so let's have Kenny and Don cut a promo. But really, we don't need to do all the other work we would do for a normal kind of personal feud because the match is going to be so good, it speaks for itself. And I think they could put more work in if they didn't think the audience just wants to see a good match.
I mean, who can tell what the reason is? Was it incompetence, laziness, just an oversight? They pack so much into all of these shows week after week after week. It makes them fly by, but it also means things have less of an impact, right? When you overbook the way they do. So, you know, tonight they had probably, you know, there were kind of two things at cross purposes here. One, they had maybe a better lead in. So maybe some NBA fans sampled the show. And so they had a chance to win over some new fans, which is their goal for year two, right, is to expand beyond the million or so they get with the DVR audience factored in every week. And that's part of the reason they brought Sting in. And why would those people want to tune in next week to see that main event, right? Just they didn't give them a reason to, and what the reason is unclear. But you know, it's time a year and a half or year and 3 months in for AEW to, you know, kind of get this stuff right. You know, I think the honeymoon is over in terms of giving them a pass just because they're new.
Speaking of which, I saw just the tail end of the NBA game, and then they went to Dynamite. I didn't see, and maybe because I didn't watch a lot of the game, maybe they did during the game. I didn't see overt hype for Sting. And to me, it's obvious that as Dynamite starts and you have an NBA audience that might not be watching wrestling these days, not even knowing that AEW exists, but has seen some commercials, or maybe heard about it or maybe not, let them know Sting is going to be on the show, and let them know within 5 seconds of the show starting. Did I miss something? Because the first thing that I remember hearing or seeing about Sting was Ross throwing it in as an aside after Shivani had plugged, I think, the Bucks and the Acclaim coming up later. Maybe it was the Dustin match or something. I'm like, they're burying the lead. Talk about a tag team title match, titles at stake, in our main event, and Sting is going to be on the show and recap for people at the top of the show that he's new, he's back, and we're going to find out why he's back soon, you know, after the, you know, a couple matches from now. Later in the first hour, you know, sell people on. You don't have to wait 2 hours to see Sting. They just didn't sell. It's just sort of like, yeah, we're just going to go to the ring for Jericho and MJF against two guys you've never heard of. I just thought that was potentially, well, I mean, they certainly lost viewers over it, but potentially lost a lot of potential viewers in the first 3-4 minutes because of that. Eric, what do you think of that, and did I miss anything?
They definitely plugged the tag team title match. I don't recall them plugging Sting and, you know, the opening tag match. It went a decent amount of time, as the opening match usually does, yeah, on Dynamite. And then we had a post-match angle with Wardlow and Hager, Hager calling out Wardlow, and then we had that acclaimed music video. So I don't think they teased Sting quickly enough, at least to keep – depends on how long those NBA fans are going to stick around, I guess, right?
Yeah, I mean, they definitely mentioned Sting during the tag match, but it was several minutes into the tag match, you know, probably 7-8 minutes in. Excalibur plugged Young Bucks Acclaimed, and then Ross just goes, oh, yeah, Sting will be out here later. It's like, that you need to start with that, because you got to know your audience. There's NBA fans watching who are like, I don't know if I want to stay up late and watch – who are these top light guys? You're like, oh, Sting's coming up? Well, okay, I'll stick around for a while. I mean, yeah, I just think it's one thing in your normal time slot when you have basically the same fans watching and they're all on social media and they know what's happening. I just think you want to format differently than go into the ring cold with no promos, no backstory, just it's Jericho, folks, and it's against this young team that we're going to tell you about from Minnesota. I think they lost some viewers, and that's
right.
I see them do that too often. I don't think they work hard enough in that opening minute or take into account that not everybody is just immersed in social media and watched last week's show and thought about last week's show since last week's show aired. I'm sure there's a lot of people who watched Dynamite. They don't think a second about it for six days and 22 hours until the next one starts. They need to be kind of reminded what's coming up and why they should be excited about the show. And I think they cater a little too much to the diehard fans who are just like eating, sleeping, breathing pro wrestling and the AEW brand 7 days a week.
I think, too, you're right about the NBA game. On commentary in the fourth quarter, they talked about that right after the game, AEW was going to start, and then name-checked the Inner Circle, but not Sting. And, like, that makes me think that, like, someone definitely handed them a piece of paper with the words Inner Circle on it. And, like, whose fault is that? You know, whose it feels like a TNT problem, maybe? Or I don't know who's at fault there, but, like, it really was a missed opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, to me, I rattle off the names that people are going to know on an NBA game, you know, who are watching an NBA game, who are maybe lapsed fans or just haven't checked in. And I mean, Sting's the obvious big signing, you know, there weren't a lot of other big names on the show. I don't know if you want to talk about Butcher and the Blade or Pac, you know, no one's going to know who Pac is, even if they know who Neville was. But you know, yeah. So anyway, point made. All right. Back to you, Mark.
Hey, yeah. So, on the Sting thing, you talked about earlier how Sting's promos are kind of a departure from the facade of his character. And I feel like perhaps now, remembering that Sting really can't wrestle because of the spinal problems after the match with Seth, I just wonder if they've lost faith in his ability to draw or to be, you know, not to shine a huge spotlight of over importance, knowing that he's extremely limited in the ring if he does anything, and certainly on the mic. You know, it's just like kind of the mask era. It's like, oh my God, you see this person, this woman with beautiful eyes, and then she takes her mask off and it's rotted teeth. That's kind of like Sting. That's not too harsh.
It's pretty
quickly
harsh, but yeah. Yeah.
Sorry. Just to quickly.
Fair. I'm just assessing. That was. To compare Sting's promos to rotted teeth is, I mean, I get the point. The point, it, It's not entirely inaccurate in terms of how much of a sharp turn it is from his ring entrance and cool image and all that. But yeah, I'm just, you asked, I answered.
That's a very Oregon analogy.
Yeah, I'm Southern Oregon. So with Kenny Omega, you know, when I called in a few weeks ago after Dynamite, I made a correlation between him, Callis, and Reigns Omega. Totally off. I was completely and totally off. However, the one thing that Omega showing on the mic, even though he didn't put Rey Fénix over, is that everybody needs to catch up. You know, just like with Reigns, Roman Reigns, you know, it's like he's in his sweet spot. He's in the role he was meant to play. And I feel like Kenny Omega is stepping into that right now. And it's, I just find it fascinating, especially after such a lackluster first year with AEW. So, you know, I kind of agree with the previous caller. You know, if Rey Fénix, if his sweet spot is speaking in Spanish and having a way to captions or whatever to get it over. Let everybody be authentically themselves. I think that would be in everybody's best interest. Okay, so just a few more things and then a question based on the your conversation with Greg Parks. When I turned on the TV, it was the Jurassic Express match. Even though I know, Wade, you've had issues with Jim Cornette, when I was watching Marco Stunt on my TV, two things came up. One, the conversation with Greg Parks you had about NXT and switching the male rosters specifically, and whether or not if I turned on NXT, would that match had made me switch off? And in the AEW, under the AEW umbrella, does it work? Or is Jim Cornette right in that Marco Stunt shouldn't be on our TV? So I guess I kind of, I'll just skip the other part about the Butcher Pack match. In your conversation with Greg Park on the flagship show, you were talking about, you know, swapping out different parts of the rosters. And if you, so as somebody who joined the show during the Jurassic Express match, and then into the Pack Butcher match. And by the way, I was thinking on that Pack Butcher match, they were starting at the top of the hour. I was like, wait a minute, are they going over? Is this an overrun? What's going on? Because I wasn't, you know, aware of the time change. So Wade, if you tuned in just like I did at 8:00 or whatever it was when the Jurassic Express match was on, and then Butcher Pack, you switch rosters. I don't know what happened on NXT. But, I mean, if it wasn't for two things, actually. One, Kenny Omega. Two, the, Blanchard. Help me. Four Horsemen, Blanchard.
FTR?
Yeah, Blanchard, the promo FTR? Blanchard cut for FTR, yeah. You know, the 80s line, you know, you're going to bring me back to the 80s or whatever it was. That made me pop.
Yeah.
Just like you heard a small pop from the crowd, and that got me engaged, as did the Omega interview. And then I watched the rest of the show. But the two matches that were on my television when I turned me off. So that's my question. What if we really did switch the male rosters and maybe I joined in on
Okay.
I don't know. Yeah, you get it. So what do you think?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think AEW – Eric, does AEW get a free pass on things because they're AEW and they're not run by Vince McMahon? They're in, where if it was on NXT, people would be all over them. I mean, NXT was sort of the darling company for a number of years, kind of taking over for Ring of Honor as the place you'd go to see the hot, young, up-and-coming, accomplished – standout indie stars from around the world who would gather and have world-class matches. AEW and NXT both in the past year have had, you know, clunker segments and some mid-card feuds that people don't like. But I'm not sure that what we saw in the – I think there's a bigger drop-off with AEW in terms of ring quality once you get past that top tier and the elite. I think there's a bigger drop-off, you know, when you see QT Marshall running in there and just – I mean, I don't want to pick on him too much, because there's a lot of people who were green and missing, just not in the right place at the right time, and it was just clunky, and you just don't see that level of drop-off with NXT very often, if at all.
I mean, AEW certainly gets a pass from AEW fans, and certain segments of the wrestling media, I think. WWE fans criticized.
That's not a stretch or a bold proclamation, Eric. You don't have to hesitate.
I wasn't going to name names there. But, but the WWE fans certainly, you know, I know Twitter isn't real life, but man, they jump all over AEW every chance they get, right? It's this blood war for some reason I don't quite get. I would love all of the promotions to be doing their best work. That gives me a lot more entertainment as a fan. I can't watch main roster WWE. It's so terrible. I do like NXT. I was cringing that Marco Stunt was back on Dynamite. I don't think he's been there in a wrestling role for quite some time. I realize he was there to – they needed – the booking made sense in that six-man tag. They needed to give the Jurassic Express a win before they head into a match with FTR. And they also needed to set up Marco being at ringside for that match against Tully Blanchard. But, you know, I mean, what have we had? 15 months of Marco Stunt, and he's just not doing it for me. I think he's more of an albatross in the Jurassic Express act. Every, you know, minute of focus that's put on him is one less minute of focus that's put on Jungle Boy, who actually has a whole heck of a lot of upside and could be their world champion someday, potentially, right? 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road. And somebody they should be building around. And so, yeah, I don't give AEW a pass for Marco Stunt at this point.
Eric, how do you feel about taking the heat you have with Marco, that is not, you're not alone, and trying to parlay that with him being an obnoxious heel manager? And is that because he can take bumps, he can run away, he can just be his obnoxious, abrasive, natural self, as it seems to be? Does that work, or are you more like, no, just go away?
Yeah, it's his go away heat. He just comes across on TV as immature, right?
Yeah,
have a great segment on Dark a couple weeks ago when he was singing his song. Oh my God, it was fantastic.
So, are you saying, yeah? Now you changed your mind? He's
no.
Not
it,
okay,
it,
okay.
It was a one off, I'm afraid.
Okay, fair enough. Joshua, your thoughts on any of our discussion here and what Mark brought up?
Yeah, I think a couple of things. I think if you switch the rosters, you run into a problem because, I mean, they're obviously being booked for different demographics, right? I think it's people who are watching WWE products, NXT products that grew up with Hulk Hogan and a little younger, and then AEW is targeting people my age who grew up with and younger who grew up with, you know, Stone Cold and The Rock and the silliness of the Attitude Era. And I think it's just a different expectations from the audience.
I think Triple H would disagree, though. I think Triple H would say I think he fancied NXT the 18 to 34 year old catering brand. And I think it kind of stabs him in the heart every week when those demos come out that AEW is just laughing.
but I mean, I think we all agree that they are doing a more traditional wrestling show than AEW.
Yeah.
I mean, right. And
not saying there isn't, it's not, I understand why AEW draws better in that demo. I'm just saying, I don't think NXT's intent is to abandon the 18 to 35-year-old. I think that's sort of a result of – and I don't think NXT is like a nostalgia show by any means. I just think AEW feels like the non-corporate WWE-branded, John Cena-esque, cool program, all the things that – you know, that's kind of – to fill in what Mark's talking about, Greg and I talked about it on yesterday's flagship, the Wake Killer Pro Wrestling podcast. Search your podcast app for the blue logo. It's free if you haven't yet. And I actually, there was a reader question sent in, and I talked in depth on a Wade Keller hotline for VIP members a week or so back about it. And the idea being, is NXT's roster, if you like flip the top, you know, 8 or 15 guys and women with AEWs, like would suddenly the same, would AEW still hold the lead in the demographics because it's the vibe and the booking and the presentation, or is it the wrestlers that's leading to it? And, you know, is it the booking and the vibe and the reputation of the company or the wrestlers that's leading to the differentiation in that? And what would the strength and weakness be of Adam Cole and Don the Velveteen Dream, who returned tonight? How would they fare at Daly's Place with Tony Khan booking and Jim Ross, Tony, and Excalibur announcing? And what if you dropped Cody and Jericho over into the Impact, not the Impact Zone, oh my God, the Performance Center? What, you know, how would that work? You know, would it work? And so it's just kind of an interesting, just, you know, thing to play out as a theory.
I guess in that case, I don't think it's any competition. I think NXT clearly has a much stronger top-to-bottom roster, particularly in the women's division, than AEW. And I think
but
given the freedoms
teams.
That...
That's one of the things. Like, not tag teams.
Yeah. But I think given the freedom that AEW seems to afford their wrestlers, I think we'd see a lot of really good, you know, we'd see Kyle O'Reilly shine, you know, by himself. We'd see a lot of gems that are kind of second tier in NXT, I think, be elevated, and that'd be great. On Marco Stunt, I don't know how to feel about him because I understand the criticisms of his size and his performances, but I also like him. I like it. He seems like a really nice, good person, and I think a lot of people want to like the people on their TV screen, and I can't say that I like the person that everyone on the roster is. And so I think that's probably where I get caught up, because you guys are probably right about his in-ring work and in performances, but he seems like such a nice guy, and that's enough for now to carry him for me.
All right, very good. Mark, anything you want to close with quick?
Yeah, just a few things. First of all, great conversation on the demos. You know, I think in 2021, honestly, we're not going to be talking about AEW versus NXT, but AEW versus Raw more so, which you, Wade, already talked about in your hotline audios, how they are in, you know, really, you know, catching up, and it's that, and that's what matters.
What's weird, Mark, is that was a story 2 weeks ago, but last week it was just like AEW collapsed, and you know, this week Raw regained a little bit coming out of TLC. So it is, I mean, it's still up and down. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion yet. I, you know, if I'm NXT, I'm not giving up. And if I'm AEW, I don't get cocky. They had two good weeks and then a bad week. So, you know, stay tuned. This is a week-to-week changing story. The die isn't cast yet.
Yeah, they don't get cocky, except you have Jericho as the demo god. I mean, come on. They're somewhat cocky. I agree on Jungle Boy Jack Perry. I do disagree on Marker Stunt. He's extremely immature, but I mean, I think he could be a fantastic Johnny Fairplay style heel manager. Hopefully, he doesn't go Lashley. That would suck. I think Jack Perry going through a heel turn and being paired up with Stunt as his manager and then growing up, turning super babyface, I think it could give him some valuable seasoning and maturity, and maybe in you know, a few years he'll add some size as he gets older. Just one more thing. I was listening to the Bucks talk about their conversations with Triple H, and Triple H charming them and offering them a lot of money and Kenny Omega a lot of money. If they went to WWE, do you think that AEW would even exist? And that's my question. That's all I got. It was a interesting interview, by the way, to listen to the Bucks. If you haven't heard it, it's worth listening to. So anyway, go VIP. That's all I got. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Mark. Yeah. Eric, I'll start with you on that. If the Bucks and Kenny were signed, would Cody and Jericho and Moxley have happened, you know, would All Out or All In have happened with just Cody without the Bucks, without Kenny? Probably not. And then you question, you know, I mean, that's probably more of a question for Tony Khan, you know, how much of this was dependent upon the Bucks and Kenny not being not signing with WWE, and would he have tried to find a way to make it happen anywhere? Would TNT have been interested?
Well, I think they would have had All In because it was the Bucks and Cody. Would they have AEW? So, well, wait, I just read this week in a day with many hours left to spare because it wasn't very long and it was fairly breezy. The Young Bucks killing the business from the backyards to the big leagues book. And to hear them tell it, Tony Khan would not have pushed forward with AEW had the Elite not signed with them. Now that's their version of it. I don't know if that's true, but that's certainly what they would lead the public to believe based on their book. I think the top end of their roster would not have been near as good without the Bucks and Kenny Omega, and then Hangman was also Hangman and Cody were also part of the signing there from New Japan, and Cody apparently was waffling a whole lot according to the Bucks, to the Jacksons in their book, and Paige was a little more with them more quickly, but
what's interesting about that, Eric, is if the Bucks and Kenny were not part of the first year of Dynamite, you barely would have noticed. You notice now because the Bucks are champs, Kenny's champ, and they're Bucks main eventing, not just having kind of highly athletic / spot fest to open shows without character development. And Kenny's not wearing white t-shirts and acting like he can't be bothered like he did for the whole first year, other than a great match now and then on pay-per-view or TV. But otherwise, he seemed pretty chill and self-satisfied. It wouldn't have affected Dynamite's ratings because they did have Jericho. They did have Moxley. They brought in some new acts. They got them over, Darby and Sammy Guevara and all that. I don't know that Dynamite's ratings would be markedly different, because it's not like the Bucks and Kenny were already established as ratings draws in this country. They can sell 10,000 tickets in Chicago, as part of an ensemble, but they themselves were not household names that were going to draw ratings or pop ratings. So, I'm not saying the course of history would have necessarily led to that even having a chance to prove itself out, but it's not as if the Bucks and Kenny were essential to the success that Dynamite has actually experienced in the first year.
Yeah, but the first year doesn't start with the first episode of Dynamite. The first year starts with the Being the Elite skit from midnight, when they've all got their phones synced up, and the buzz from the first press conference
yeah.
they had, and then the Vegas press conference in Vegas, and that first show where Moxley debuts, and they had didn't they have a ladder match with the Lucha Brothers at the All Out show September 2019. So,
but Eric, what I'm saying is if you avoid all those, if you exclude all those pertinent facts that you're bringing up, I'm just saying if Dynamite got on the air and they had...
There's no buzz without him, right? There's way less of a buzz
Joshua,
the first episode of Dynamite without him.
I
completely agree that the buzz wouldn't be there, because I think a lot of the promotion relied on like rabid fans doing aggressive word of mouth advertising. I think people's enthusiasm for the Bucks and for Kenny Omega and then for the product really, really pushed it into the consciousnesses of people that definitely I don't think would have happened. Now, would Tony Khan gotten into some sort of wrestling business? Maybe, maybe a version of MLW or Impact that wasn't as good or interesting, but who knows? I don't think personally that it would have happened at all.
Yeah. I think if they, again, this is, again, totally hypothetical, and I'm being self-deprecating when I'm saying, if you set all those pertinent facts, Eric, aside, but if you give them 1.6 million people on the first week to check out the product because of massive promotion and, curiosity over Jon Moxley, if you do that, it's not as if the only way they sustained their audience was because of the great first few months that the Bucks and Kenny had as establishing themselves as stars. Because they, intentionally, downplayed, the EVPs downplayed themselves a bit, less Cody than the others, because of, Jericho and Moxley and then trying to create some new stars. So I just think if you drop Jericho and Moxley in front of 1.5 million people on Dynamite episode number one, I get your point. They wouldn't be there if not for the Bucks generating all that PR and excitement. But the show itself, I think, was sustainable for the first few months without them and probably would have done quite well on the back of Jericho's stellar work and Moxley's star power and the buzz of him coming over and the other talent that they had on the show, which was quite impressive.
You, Wade, had that great interview with Jon Moxley. Go VIP, check it out. That was a couple hours long. And I can't remember if he touched on this, but like if AEW wasn't around, was his plan just to do Japan and the Indies forever?
He said he would have left WWE and not opened that envelope with that final offer, and he would have gone and worked in CZW, and he just wanted to be happy as an artist again.
Right.
That was his story. I don't think Moxley left. If you're to believe Moxley, he would not have left. He would have left WWE regardless of AEW existing and giving him an offer, and he would have worked Japan and Indies and been totally happy. And does he show up for ROH or Impact or MLW? Maybe not, but it wasn't like that was a package deal that he was dependent on. So
that's the real question, is without AEW, does ROH still nosedive to the bottom of the barrel?
Man, I mean, there's enough talent that would be available that if they scouted correctly, you know, they'd be in better shape. But does ROH, you know, I mean, ROH with Sinclair and their ownership of regional sports networks and stuff, I mean, if AEW didn't eat up such a market share, I could imagine that there would be, you know, somebody could have looked at the roster depth and the availability of some other names and just said, let's now push to get to the next level. But when with AEW taking that spot, I can see that, you know, not gaining traction within Sinclair. But Sinclair certainly has the money. If they wanted to get serious about it, they could have. And AEW did kind of take away that option. All right, well, we've got one more person on hold. We'll go to that. If you're listening to us live here, though, you are still welcome to call and join us. 347-215-8558 is the number. Push 1 on your keypad when you call if you want to be on the show. All right, so 305, you are up. Go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Eric. Hey, Josh. Hey, Wade. It's Javier from Miami. Feliz noche buena.
Javier, you can be there to translate the promos from Lucha Bros if they start giving impassioned promos in Spanish.
Well, it's funny because that's the thing. Phoenix actually speaks English very well. So, I mean, with an accent, obviously, but, you know, I've heard him speak in, when he was over on Impact. So that's not really – I mean, obviously, it's not going to be the same as if you're cutting an impassioned promo in Spanish, obviously. And from my understanding, so does Penta. He just prefers to speak in Spanish because of said, you know, impassioned promos that he can cut. So in Impact, you get Phoenix cutting the promo in English, and then Penta would say something, you know, would cut a promo in Spanish. I really don't think that is the you know, the reason, you know, one of the reasons why. I have a feeling that it might be just because they're not like solely theirs. It's not, you know, because they're primarily they're primarily AAA. So that's the only reason I could really think that makes them different from everybody else on the roster. So
are you pitching Phoenix cut and passion promos for Sting in English? Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah,
I might have missed
her,
but go ahead.
That's what I'm getting at.
All right.
I was going to say that not only to the prior conversation we were just having, that it's not only the buzz that was generated, but what about the talent? Because these were a lot of people, you know, from, you know, the stuff I followed, it seemed a lot of the people, some of the, you know, the Darby Allins and a lot of those people were people that the Young Bucks and met on the road and that they vouched for to build that roster. So I think that also would have been, you know, a factor in AEW and whether these people would have, you know, joined if Tony Khan had created, you know, a company out of whole cloth, would they have wanted to join, you know, a risky venture like that, you know, or that sort of thing. So I think that also comes into play too.
Yeah. Although you could say there might have been some positive based on some exclusions from the Friends of the Bucks being the elite roster too. it might not bring the average down as much as some of the hangers on have, but I don't want to name names or anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I pretty much pictured exactly some of the people we're talking about, particularly a infamous pre-show. The thing about Kenny, I like the promo they did today, but why does he feel like he was treated more as a more important piece of the show on Impact these last 2 weeks than they have on AEW? Because on Impact, they spent the entire, they kept going back to him. You know, they involved him with the tag, you know, one of the co-holders, tag team champion, you know, because of the Bullet Club. So it just felt that there was more. I got more Kenny Omega on Impact than I got on AEW these last 2 weeks.
A part of it could be because Kenny's a big deal relative to what Impact has, and Kenny isn't the only top-tier star that AEW has. And also this week's show was on late at night on a holiday when ratings traditionally go down. So, you know, we got some Kenny to keep him on the radar. But my take, Joshua, is, tell me if you agree, that this was not meant to be a blockbuster lineup or blockbuster show. They are having Moxley next week, you know, so it's not like they're just throwing in the towel until 2 weeks from now. They're giving themes to the next two episodes, but this show in particular, it felt like they kind of knew they were going to be on late at night and probably have less of an audience. So, I get your larger point, Javier, but this wasn't the week to expect Kenny and Callis to be involved in something really big center ring, in a big storyline forwarding thing. I think it was more, let's get people excited to see if Phoenix can take some shots at Kenny and give him more of a fight than Kenny's given him credit for. And I think that was the psychology of what they did today.
Yeah, I think this is definitely and plainly a B team show, because I don't think we're properly appreciating the difficulty of promoting a show that starts whenever the basketball game's over. You know, like how do you get people to plan to watch that? And so why waste any star power, any extra star power, on a show that almost nobody is going to watch relative to I think week to week ratings.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much of a drop off there'll actually be, especially in the first half hour of the show. As it gets later, there'll be a drop off just as there was last time they aired on delay. But it was a competitive game to the end. Came down to a replay and a missed free throw that almost sent it into overtime. So it was a competitive marquee matchup with some star power and a big team. So I think they're probably pretty good in audience they were inheriting, but it's going to be a different audience. And so the goal is that some of those people like what they saw and will come back next week at the regular time. Eric, any thoughts on this topic?
I mean, the last 2 weeks have kind of been like that. They really haven't given away that much.
Yeah.
This week, why would you waste it out of your normal time slot on Christmas Eve? Kenny did wrestle last week. He was in that match with Joey Janela, and they did have Pac come out with the Lucha Bros at the end of the show to kind of set up the show that's next week. It was last week. It was 2 weeks away. So they did their thing to promote the show, and they made 2 weeks last week, and then they did something this week, even if it wasn't that great, to remind people that it's going to be the main event of next week's show, presumably.
All right, Javier, back to you.
Yeah, my thing is just that I was thinking of two things of the Roman Reigns, how the best episodes have his presence throughout the entire episode. They're running a big story. And I was even thinking back to NWA, where Nick Aldis would, pop up, in the middle of like segments he really wasn't involved in, just to scope things out. And, just having his presence there, pushed the idea that he was the big, he was the biggest thing in the NWA.
I'm curious, what were Kenny and Callis, what's the cover story for why they were at the hotel in the first place if they weren't otherwise part of the show? Do we know?
I don't think there was one.
Yeah.
It was like they goofed on Alex Marvez, which is always one of my favorite parts of the show, that he was being creepy for waiting for them to show up at the hotel. I mean, it was, barely a pretense. I think to what Javier was saying, Tony Khan tries to pack so much in every show week to week because he's only got 2 hours that
don't say that, Eric. Don't say only. That could be misinterpreted.
Please don't tempt fate.
Yes, don't tempt fate. That's plenty of time, Eric. Plenty of time.
Well, he doesn't have – he is trying to pack so much in that he doesn't do the Nick Aldis thing in the NWA or the Roman Reigns is all throughout SmackDown, because he wants to focus on 15 different things, and he has the pressure to try and build up next week's show, whereas other promotions, that's not always the case, right? They just make announcements on social media, or, Vince comes in and rewrites the scripts at the last minute. So it's harder for them to promote. So I think that's why you don't get Kenny, wall-to-wall Kenny throughout the show, and I don't think that was limited to Kenny. I feel like we got maybe a little bit more Moxley when he was the champ, throughout, sprinkled in throughout a show, maybe than Kenny so far, but probably the same was true for Jericho, but the roster is so much bigger now than it was then. So they're just trying to pack it all in and get new people over.
Javier, back to you.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite lines was, I'm paraphrasing, I don't remember word for word, but Don Callis saying that in 30 years in the business, he's never seen talent make their own matches. That was a great line.
Really, Don.
Apparently, he has spent 30 years not watching WWE. and other companies that copy them. So
yes.
And I think they did Sean Spears hit Wade Keller Bingo, talking about the EVPs and how he's being held down.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I think we got bingo. I did like Shivani saying, you know, you're the common denominator in all this. Have you thought about that? And you know, Spears said it's crossed my mind, but you're a piece of shit for saying that. I was like, yeah, okay, that's pretty good. I mean, there's something to be – there is truth to the arc of Spears' career, but Shivani's comeback is the key line that is, I guess, supposed to be where the heat is on Spears continuing to be a joke. You know, Spears saying, you know, if you don't push me harder, I'm going to go away. And kind of the implied punchline is we're not going to notice you're gone because you've barely been around for the first year. And, yeah, so, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't think Spears gets this kind of TV time on a primetime show. You know, this felt like a dark segment, like last night when, you know, Christopher Daniels and Kaz got, you know, 8 minutes to talk about their friendship and develop a storyline. It's like that's not going to make it onto a regular Dynamite.
Go ahead, Eric.
Did we get a blow off on Sean Spears and Scorpio Sky? Did they ever get their rematch?
I don't. Did they have one on?
I don't think so.
I was trying to think if they had one on Dark, but I don't think they did. So, yeah.
So that's forgotten about? That's very WWE-like.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't know if it's forgotten about. It's just sort of they lost interest and they'll regain interest when they think of it again. that's a reframing of the same thing, but different. Yes.
WWE, they just lose interest and they never come back to it.
Yeah.
Was there, I can't remember, a story reason on how FTR snaked Tully Blanchard from Sean Spears?
I know there was just that comment once where they said that FTR and Sean Spears don't want to have anything to do with each other, but Tully happens to manage both of them, basically saying you'll never see them on camera together. Yeah.
And Tully wasn't there tonight with Sean Spears in that interview with Shivani. He was just there with FTR.
Yeah, yeah, good point.
And then, you know, my other notes on that, more whining and inside references to the Wade Keller bingo. And he has not grown as a character in his 18 months. He's still complaining about Cody 18 months in. So it's,
yeah.
Is his deal up? Were they writing him off TV? I don't understand.
And are we to believe that Sean Spears has taken a look at his career and truly believes that he is the best, most talented wrestler at AEW?
Actually, what I got a kick out of is he says I'm more talented than 95% of anyone. It's like he's admitting, as cocky as he is, one out of 20 guys are clearly better than me. Now, still, that's quite the boast, but most guys are like going to say I'm better than anybody, and he's like, yeah, out of 40, there's two that are better than me. I wouldn't be shocked if he doesn't show up at Impact Wrestling based on this promo. I don't want to read too much into it, but you know, he said he has the talent to work anywhere in the world, and he's leaving, and he'll only come back if he wants to. That almost sounds like he's being shipped over to Impact to be part of, you know, whatever that ongoing story is going to continue to be in 2021.
Isn't that the perfect place for him, though? Well, isn't their relationship with Impact the perfect opportunity for a farm system with workers that have experience and aren't just, you know, the indie guys on Dark? I think that's a tremendous spot for him.
Yeah, he can have a feud with Rich Swann and March.
Let me handle Wolf. This away. They
go ahead,
team him up
yeah.
with Brandon with Brian Myers.
Oh, there you go. Yes. Now, well, Sean
Brian Myers
is kind of
already doing
think,
the same
Javier? Gimmick. Yes, and just for the effect, not because he'd actually have to, but should Sean Spears change his name when he goes to Impact, just like everyone else has to, or should he just go by Spears, like Keith?
Yes. So, I mean,
or Sean.
Spears.
It might be more intimidating if he's just Sean.
Yeah. Sean and Brian and yeah. Anyway. All right. Anything else, Javier?
No, I think that's I think that was it. I there was just one other thing, but I forgot what it was.
Fair enough.
It's a late night.
I'll look for it in email as usual.
Javier, did you maybe want to crap all over the Sheeta Abaddon angle?
I have no idea what to make of that yet.
I've got lots of
thoughts.
Oh, good. I had to set you up next if we didn't get a call on it. So, good. We're all great minds are thinking alike here.
Yeah, I mean, I should already have an opinion about it because I kind of like the spooky, creepy stuff. But yeah, and I also get the feeling that Sheeta's not really into this. I get the impression that she's not really into the storyline that they're telling here. But yeah, I haven't been fond of it. So, and I tend to like try to look at the bright side of pretty much any angle, you know, covering, you know, the hits and misses for Impact. You kind of have to, so.
All right, Javier. Well, thank you for that question that Eric gave to you to ask. We'll now throw to Eric for his thoughts on the angle.
Oh my God. So if WWE rightly got crapped on for that Randy Orton burning the Fiend dummy main event, I mean, this is at least a 25 to 50% as bad, right? I mean, oof. We're supposed to think that she took a pound of flesh out of Sheeta's neck. There's a little bit of blood under there.
She at least broke skin. I don't know about the pound of flesh, but yeah.
I mean, you know, AMC airs The Walking Dead, not TNT, so we're not even getting like a cross show promotion here.
They did that with Shayna Baszler. I don't know if they're aware of that, but Shayna Baszler's gimmick for a little bit was doing that, and it was ridiculed, rightly so. At least it fits the Abaddon character, but yeah, I mean, they're trying to sell Abaddon as like some sort of, you know, zombie horror movie freak. What's the series on FX where she would have fit into one of the seasons? Every year it was a different ensemble. But anyway,
American Horror Story.
Yes, American Horror Story. Thank you.
Yeah,
I think of the house on. Anyway, yeah. I mean, I don't mind the Abaddon character and the look, and you know, it's like fine. I mean, it's not my favorite thing in the world, but yeah, it's sort of a feud before Britt Baker moves into the main event again. That's fine, but her, you know, going for the neck and biting, it feels like it's going into a place that I think people who like AEW, because they're not like WWE, it's too much AEW being like WWE. Even if AEW can defend it, or they think it's harmless, or oh, you're all making too big of a deal out of it, I think it just goes against the ideal branding of AEW that we're not going to do crap like that, and we're aware that that's crap. And it has some baggage with it. Joshua, go ahead, your thoughts.
Yeah, I first want to say that I like Abaddon just fine. I like all sorts of fun and stupid wrestling stuff, and this is fun and stupid wrestling stuff, I think. My problem is mostly the feud with Sheeta. This is the first time Sheeta's wrestled on Dynamite in a full month, right? And she was on screen for like 6 minutes, and it was against someone named Alex Gracia, who we've never seen on Dynamite before, and it was used to build a feud against a person they've already established is not a real zombie, but a person pretending to be a zombie that bit her neck and has only wrestled once on Dynamite, and that was back in March. And it seems like such a waste of a good worker, and I think it's just I've yelled about this a lot on the internet and in the primers, but like it's so clear that the women's division is less than a second thought in booking, and a lot of that has to do, you know, there's not a great level of talent or depth to the women's roster. But even with the talented workers like Sheeta, this seems disrespectful to give her 6 minutes on a show. Like, we watched that show. You're telling me there wasn't extra time for Sheeta to do something interesting? We couldn't have cut, you know, Sean Spears or cut some time out of the Colt Cabana Jurassic Express. It's so wasteful.
I'll push back a little bit, because I think AEW's policy the first year was give the women a chance to go have 10, 12, 14-minute matches, and it was – it killed the audience, and the matches.
Oh, it was a real problem.
They didn't have enough. Like, there just wasn't enough interest in the matches. So, to me, what I was pushing for is let's get the division in order first. Let's build it up, and then have long matches when it's justified. Alex Gracia was an unknown who won on Dark last night to qualify for this match, and she went in as a heavy underdog. She didn't get her own ring entrance. And Sheeta should beat her in 3.5 minutes, which she did. I don't think you want to just give TV time for the sake of TV time to someone.
Sure.
So to me, it would hurt Sheeta to take 10 minutes to beat Gracia, and I'm not sure Gracia is ready to have that long of a match. I just haven't seen enough of her. So to me, it's more what they're doing otherwise to scout and build up the talent and book.
And I don't think longer matches in most cases are the answer to anything, but I think there's other interesting things Sheeta can be doing. You know, we got a glimpse of a backstage segment with her right before her entrance. And I just think that your world champion should be doing stuff.
Yeah.
I think we've seen the NWA Women's World Champion, you know, three times as much.
And look at Io Shirai. I mean, what they do with her in NXT, I mean, the video packages have really built her up as a star.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been creative. It's been high budget. It looks high budget. And you get the feeling there's a real shine. The promotion really feels like they've got something special with her. And they've taken unconventional ways to build her up. And with Sheeta, it's like she's smiling and she's nice. And as soon as she gets two words out, she's interrupted because they don't have confidence in her promos. And perhaps rightfully so, you know. But it feels like, you know, the Rey Mysterio technique, which is, well, no one's going to watch this guy, you know, talk for this very long. So we're, you know, he had a streak going of, you know, 13 out of 14 interviews were interrupted within 20 seconds of him starting to talk. I'm making all that up, but it's probably not too far off
sure,
the truth
sure.
either. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think, yeah, something, anything, you know, making me care about the next time they throw, you know, the women's championship match on a pay-per-view at the last second, no storyline, you know, there's anything to make me care about it, I think is, and I need it to be equal time with the men or whatever, but like, just give it, you know, treat it with some level of respect.
Yeah. Eric, anything on that or anything else you want to throw in before I wrap up here? I think I'm kind of scrolling through and I mean, we've covered just about everything either specifically or at least tangentially. Jade Cargo,
we've talked about that. Let's keep it. Part of the murderer's row of awfulness.
Yes.
That was the second hour for the main event stage. I mean, looking forward to next week. We've got an Omega Phoenix main event that'll be a good match, even if it wasn't built the way we armchair bookers would necessarily have done it. We've got Moxley finally returning. We've got a women's title match, and then we've got the Bowling Shoe Ugly Wardlow Hager match. So it's next week. They're clearly, you know, they're making an effort, and then that leaves the January 6th show a little bit more thin, with just the Darby Allin TV title defense. And I think that's the show. January 6th is when NXT is loading up their card. So AEW could do pretty well next week, and then not as well on January 6th when. But they, you know, NXT tends to do better, I think, when they have a gimmick name like Halloween Havoc, or, you know, they give it the show a special name. And that's not necessarily true for AEW, we've seen in the ratings. So heading into the round the bend here in 2021, maybe on a little more even playing field. I don't know. Maybe NXT closes the gap on January 6th a little bit.
Joshua, your final thoughts on anything?
Yeah, I wanted to talk. We didn't talk much about the first tag match, which is fine. It was, you know, not super remarkable, but I was very impressed by Top Flight and how far Top Flight's come. And then when one of the commentators mentioned that one of them is only 19 years old, that's great. I think those guys are going to be really great, and I'm really looking forward to see what they do.
Yeah, I think part of the appeal of AEW and one of the good things about the formula is they don't have everybody suiting with each other, wrestle each other constantly in various incarnations of matches with 50-50 booking and distraction and interference finishes. Instead, we get to see Top Flight lose but gain from the loss because they get to show off what they do, and it doesn't feel like they've been defined down permanently by losing. Instead, they're just not ready to be they're not at the level where they would be expected to be at MJF and Jericho, but they won by just lasting 14 minutes with them, and they look like they deserved and earned that much ring time with them.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, it's a good way to book, and I think you know, Vince McMahon greatly underestimates how much people enjoy watching wrestlers on journeys when they're less established working their way up. And, you know, Bret Hart did. I mean, I cite that. He went from a guy losing winning opening house show matches and not get much TV time to being at one of my favorite tag teams of all time with Jim Neidhart with great matches and then Intercontinental and then worked his way up to world title status just because he forged this bond with fans who were on the journey with him the whole way. And AEW does that with a good number of wrestlers, and some rise and some don't over time, but you watch it happen. And by the time Top Flight become an actual ranked top five team, you're going to go, wow, these guys really grew into it, and I've been there from the beginning. And and they don't all have to be at that pace. I like that the Acclaim got shot to the top and established and looked like they belonged in the ring. They're a more mature, polished pair of indie wrestlers who are ready for this, and I think they showed it in the ring against the Bucks. I mean, they looked every bit ready for that 15 minutes of time they had with the Bucks, and it wasn't just the Bucks carrying two green guys. It was two guys who matched them and knew where to be and hit their spots really well. So AW, I think, mixes and matches that well, and that opening match is an example of it.
Absolutely. And I think these guys are developing really quickly, too. I mentioned in the primer today about Private Party. I went back and watched that first match in the tag team tournament against the Bucks, which was very sloppy compared to last week's match against the Bucks, which I found very impressive how far they've come. And I think that, it's a tribute to Dark and to the work they're doing there and to having, you know, just veterans and ring time around. And I just think the future is very, very bright for homegrown talent in AEW.
Very good. Eric, thank you so much. Always great having you on to get your take on AEW. Anything else come to mind before we sign off?
No. Subscribe to your local newspaper. Go VIP. Happy holidays and Merry Christmas.
Excellent. And Joshua, thank you. Give any social media plugs and mention what you do for the Torch, and then we'll sign off.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. Maybe I deactivated a lot. I'm at Josh_Chambers. I write the AEW Dynamite Primers every Wednesday for the Torch. And you can check out my podcast called How Bad Could It Be? Me and famous comedian
Elf. Is this about Brandi Rhodes' latest gimmick?
It's about Brandi Rhodes' pregnancy specifically. It's really hateful and angry.
Wow.
No, it's we do stuff that we don't want to do, and we talk about it. And we just had our 100th episode this week, and you should check it out.
That's why your audio sounds good. 100 podcasts under the...
Absolutely.
Yes. Awesome, cool. So name the podcast again so people know.
It's How Bad Could It Be. It's everywhere podcasts are, and you can check out patreon.com/How Bad Could It Be.
Cool, excellent. Thanks, Joshua. Thanks, Eric. And thanks to our callers, and, of course, thanks to our listeners. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Hopefully we'll talk to you before then. But have a great weekend, everybody. And until next time, Wade Keller signing off.